I took a few days and a few minutes off. A few weeks, I mean, and a few minutes off. Sorry, I'm late. Unfortunately, we lost a very beloved member of the Shear just to New York. At least this one Shear will say in honor of Sarah Kruger, and we wish her much professional and personal hatzlacha in New York. Okay, so in the last few weeks, you may have forgotten how you're talking, but perhaps that's where we left off, was the end of Perek Aleph. And we're up to now Perek Beis of Bereishis. Just in case you're counting, we had 12 shurim on Perek Aleph. On the one hand, it is a lot. We did a lot. We covered a lot. On the other hand, we could have had at least 12 other shurim and 12 more shurim on Perek Aleph. There's really so much there. But again, certainly for me, this has been very, very wonderful limud, and I hope you have found it fulfilling and enlightening as well. Perek Beis is a little bit of shorter perek. In isolation, it's probably an easier perek. However, as we will see, we can't read Perek Beis in isolation from Perek Aleph. Perhaps the most famous and central component of Perek Beis is the creation of Adam. We're actually introduced for the first time to Chava. She is created specifically here in the Perek Beis as well. And perhaps the most famous thing which about characteristic of Perek Beis is the fact that it seems to diverge in so many important ways from Perek Aleph in terms of the creation of Adam and obviously by definition Chava. Just to give a very brief overview of the Perek, we will be focusing tonight on Psukim Aleph through Gimel, the first few Psukim, which are actually about Shabbos and the completion, the day of rest that the seventh day seems to imply. Psukim Dalet, this is my own unofficial breakup. Dalet through Zion seem to be a review of Brias Adam, again with that introduction as well of Chava. And then you have Psukim Ches through Yadalet, where we're then introduced to the concept called Gan Eden and the creation of the plant life, which is described as that garden. Psukim 15 through 17, Tesvav through Yitzayin, we have mankind, Adam, being planted in the Gan, given the rule over the Gan, as well as being a ruler in the Eitz Hadas issue. And finally, Psukim Yud Ches through Chafei, 18 through 25, we have the creation of Chava, among other things, Adam naming the animals, etc. And then, of course, once we'll get through all of that, that sets the stage for Perek Gimel when all of a sudden, the serpent, the Nachash, comes on the stage. But that is an overview of Perek Beis. And what I would like to do, I don't know how many shurim will take us, but obviously the body of work which we'll have to do is going to relate first to Adam and Chava, the creation, understanding the creation in light of what we learned in Perek Aleph, the notion of the Gan Eden, what does that mean? Perhaps we can try to find out where it is. And then an issue of the Eitz Hadas, what that represents, and finally, of course, that will set the stage for one of the most fascinating stories in the entire Torah, which is the issue of the snake, Chava, Adam, and the tree. Maybe that's a play somewhere or something, but actually probably it is. Anyway, very, very important, very important, and very fascinating and famous stories, which we'll need to understand on a level that I imagine is probably more deep and more probing than we probably have previously. So let's begin. Let's read the three psukim, the Aleph through Gimel, which are going to be our focus tonight, and then Yirtzeh Hashem will be up and ready for next week. So, Perek, first of all, before I even read that, I guess just a quick word. I'm not a historian, but just as a quick word, since this is our first opportunity to say so, and that is that, as you may know, and it's worth noting, the whole concept of prakim, of chapters, is actually not a Jewish one. That is not something that comes from the Torah or even Chazal. It's a Christian invention. Now, we generally go by that, right? The Art Scroll doesn't usually use Christian editorial policies for translation of Psukim and otherwise things, but this has already become, I don't want to say Minig Yisrael, I guess. It's interesting, when it comes to Navyur, especially Tehillim, you have some people who are very makbid not to use the word Perek for this reason. You'll hear the word Kapitel. It's like going out of the way not to say Perek. If I'm not mistaken, I may have read somewhere that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has such a hakpada. Capital's Latin? Okay. But again, my own experience is I don't remember ever hearing a shir or a drush or a rabbi said Zaktin Parsha in Kapitel Gimel. I never ever heard such a thing. So, for whatever reason, especially in Chumash, this has become very accepted. Chazal or the Torah, merely from a Daraisa level, we do have a notion of breaking up paragraphs or ideas, and that is what's familiar most to the Balei Kriya, those who have seen the Torah inside. We have what's called the Psuchos and the Chthumos, the prime time, sometimes where it ends at the end of the line, other times where it ends at the beginning of, sometimes in the middle of the line, we have a big space. So there is certainly an implication of different themes. And the truth of the matter is, one could very well make the argument that if we were dividing up the book of Bereishis, we might have had, quote-unquote, Perak Aleph lasting to another three psukim. Because this is really the completion, these three psukim, of Perak Aleph. Why they decided to put the Perak Aleph there, I don't know. Perhaps we can gain some insight, but that's just, again, really the Hakdama, just worth keeping in mind, since this is our first transition from Perak to Perak. Okay, Vayechulu HaShemayim, says the Torah. Vayechulu HaShemayim v'ha'aretz v'chol tzva'am. And thus the heaven and the earth were finished. Chol tzva'am and all of their hosts. We'll have to see what that means. Vayechal Elokim v'yom ha'shvi'i malachto asher asa, and God stopped or rested from all the work that he had been doing on the seventh day. Yishpas v'yom ha'shvi'i, and he rested on the seventh day mikol malachto asher asa from all the work that he did. Vayevarach Elokim v'yom ha'shvi'i v'yekadesh asa. For the first time, right, this did not happen ever before. No day was ever blessed before. It was Tov Mov. We didn't see a day being blessed, right? So God not only blesses the seventh day, he sanctifies it. Why? Kivo Shabbos Mikom Lachto, because it's on that day that he rested from his work, Asher Bara Elokim Lasos, which he had used, utilized in order to create the world. Again, these are very famous psukim from Tefillah, from Kiddush. We all know, almost all of us probably know these psukim by heart, and it's worth now spending some time studying them. And the truth is, we'll spend a whole shiur and lots of sources analyzing some important questions or themes that emerge from these psukim, but I'll really be focusing primarily on one posuk. And the truth is that there's probably even more. This is so chock-filled of information and depth that we probably could even do one or two more shiurim just, again, on these three psukim. We won't, but it's worth noting how much there really is. So the opening, before we even get to the heart of the matter, which I want to discuss, the opening of the perek introduces us to an interesting and a new word, vayechulu. What does that mean, vayechulu? What does vayechulu mean? How do you translate vayechulu? So the art scroll says, finished. So it's just worth noting, take a look at the source sheet for a moment. I thought there was something very interesting that Rav Hirsch makes. Rav Hirsch, in general, is very fascinating, but I find that in the opening psukim here of Perek Beis, he really has some very, very sharp and insightful things. Look what Rav Hirsch says. And this is, for those who are familiar, this is, in a certain sense, a vintage Rav Hirsch. He very much goes to what he suggests or what he thinks are the roots of words to see what he has is his symbolic meaning. So he says the root kala, that is vayechulu, that's the root, chaf lamed hey, combines two apparently opposing meanings. Kala means to be destroyed, completely cease to exist. And he quotes a proof text, the pasuk in Malachi, which uses a version of the word chalisem, and there, the idea there, in a positive sense, is that Bnei Israel have not been destroyed. We have not ceased to exist. So you see from there that the shoresh of chala means cease to exist, to be destroyed. At the same time, the same root means to reach the highest degree of perfection. And it comes another proof text from Malachim Aleph, how the house was complete, chala, right? Kalos, that's often used to mean perfection. So this is not just two meanings. Sometimes you can have a word which has two meanings. This seems to be meanings which are driving in opposite directions. Completely destroyed and complete or perfect. So Rav Hirsch suggests two very interesting explanations for what the real meaning of the word is that synthesizes both of these two apparently opposite meanings. First, he suggests that every perfection on one side presupposes the complete cessation on the opposite side. Anything and anybody can only be perfect if the person or thing gives itself up completely to that end. He who wishes to be perfect in various things will only be half perfect in each of them. This is a very, very profound thought. you want to be perfect at something, you have to give everything you have, complete focus, complete dedication, complete sense of purpose to that one thing. If you think you're going to dabble in this, dabble at that, and be perfect at that, you're not going to be perfect at anything, let alone if you think you're going to be perfect at many things. I remember quite a few summers ago, I was in Camp Morasha Kollel, and there was the son-in-law of one of the Rebbeim there, who was in the Kollel of Beis Yehuda in Detroit, and he said over an idea from the Rosh Yeshiva, who I think has since passed away, in Detroit. I don't remember the development of it, but basic upshot was, we have this Masorah, I'm sure we've all heard it, that a malach, an angel, can only do one thing. So what? Why? I can do 100 things. Sometimes at once. A malach is a super duper angelic divine being. Why can I only do one thing? As he said, because a malach does what they're doing completely. Perfectly. We think we're doing many things at once. But we're doing this one only 50%, only this one 20%, this one 10%. If you want to do something completely, you can only do one thing. And that's the same idea that our first says. Lahavdil, but again, for those for whom this may resonate, I think it's a very, drives the whole point home very real in a very real sense. You see this a lot about whether it be artists or sports stars or others that you hear about, especially those who are like child prodigies. Like from the time they were, who knows what age, this is the only thing that they really focused on doing. Nebuch, maybe someone made them go to school and they had to every now and then call up their grandmother. But really, this is like the only thing that was important to them. And sometimes you hear about that and you think it's kind of sad. And maybe it is sad because it's one thing you've said, I'm learning my whole life. I'm doing chesed my whole life. Right? If you say I'm hitting a golf ball my whole life, what kind of life is that? But the bottom line is you want to be Tiger Woods, you want to be the best in the world. That's pretty much all you can do. And I really thought about it today because I saw Nebuch, unfortunately, his father died today. For those who don't know, Earl Woods, Oliver Shaw. Tiger Woods, his father. Okay. He sired one of the, perhaps the greatest golfer in history. And he seems like a pretty good guy also. So he should have looked like a Gan Eden. Okay. But the point is that you see, that for those who are familiar with him at all, this is famous about him, both when he was youth and even to this very day. And the fact is, once they said, oh, Nebuch, he got married recently, and his play's going to drop off. And on one hand, it sounds crazy, but it's also true. You cannot be perfect and incredibly, you know, win every tournament and have other interests. And this is what Mamash first says, and he says this is hinted at in these two opposite meanings of the Shoresh of Challah. Second thing that our verse says, he says further, three lines from the bottom, there's no such thing, this is also very interesting, no such thing as absolute destruction, even though in that pasuk in Malachi, it sounded like the Shoresh meant complete destruction. So the verse, you see from this, that there is no such thing as complete destruction. All ceasing is only relative, is only the complete transition from one condition and form. It's a transition from one thing to another. It's not absolute. The fundamental conception of Challah is to strive for a certain end. Hence, the word tachlis. Tachlis is also the same root, to have a purpose. The purpose, sichle, striving towards achieving a particular goal. So, vayechulu ha-shamayim, essentially, says Rafersh, is the shamayim earth achieved their tachlis. They achieved their designated purpose. And if you want to put it together with the first thing the verse says, with 100% perfection, because there was only one focus, that is, they should reach the purpose that Hashem created them for.
So it's also a proof text, in a sense, for the laws of the first laws of thermodynamics.
You'll have to enlighten me, and perhaps others in the room.
Laws of conservation of energy and mass, meaning that it's all here. It may change form,
That's the second idea of reverse.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very good.
It really, I mean, it fits in very nicely.
Right. Very good. Very good. How long have we known that rule?
Probably at least since Newtonian times, I guess.
Okay, so maybe reverse knew it.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was known. I'm saying in his time. Okay, he wasn't known as a scientist, more of a man of letters and arts, but still, he may certainly have been familiar with it. Now, another word in the same pasuk that we're introduced to, which is perhaps even more intriguing and confusing, is Tzva'am. Right? We always talk about Hashem Tzva'kos. Right? It's the name of Hashem, which is where the idea of saying it as Kuf, not Tzva'os, but Tzva'kos comes from. It's the name of Hashem. What does that mean? So usually that's translated as the God of hosts, or God and his hosts. So they point out that often Tzavah also relates, although not even, in a certain sense it implies like an army regiment, like a host, like the whole army unit. They point out it doesn't necessarily be limited to an army, but it means some kind of regimented thing, which is specifically there for a purpose. So it's interesting that in this context, again, it's the first time it's used, the Ramban has a very interesting comment. Just to tell us, what does this mean? Shamayim v'aretz v'chol tzavam. What else is there? Shamayim v'aretz, what else is there? So says the Ramban, it's being very specific. Tzva ha'aretz, heim haniskarim. It's referring back to everything we learned about in the first parak. Chaya, romes, dogim v'chol tzumeach. Everything that was on the ground, the different types of animals, the creepy crawling things, the big things, the little things, the plant life, all of that is the Tzva Ha'aretz. Tzva Hashamayim, what are the hosts of heavens? Shneim Oros, V'Hakochavim, right? The sun, the moon, and the stars, Haniskarim. And he quotes again a proof text for this. So all of these things that were already, that we knew about, that was created, that's Tzva'am. And then he says, if you look at the end of the second line, two other things are also included in Tzva'am. Gam Yichlol Hasichliim HaNivdalim, the separated or the removed intellects. If you look in the notes, like in the Chevelle notes of the Ramban, he says, what is the Ramban Kli driving at? What are the separated or removed intellects? Angels. It's referring to angels. The Ramban is saying, again, we saw this, I don't want to review it now, we saw this with the Ben Abachai and also Ramban, we saw this, even though angels are never explicitly created in terms of the text, we've seen Mefarshim, we saw this in previous Shurim, alluding to some of the Machlokas, even in the Medrash. What day were the angels created on? But bottom line, everyone agrees that there's some concept, whatever this means, of angels, and that they were part of creation, and the Ramban here reiterates it. And furthermore, on the last line, the Ramban says, and what's the last thing, which is also included in Tzva'am? V'chein nafshos ha'adam. They're also Tzva'a ha'shamayim heina. Part of the hosts of the heavens, part of the Tzva'am, again, in the divine sense, is that divine spark, that neshama, that soul that each and every one of us have. So Tzva'am, even though on the one hand it sounds like this very vague term, what the Ramban says is actually a way of very specifically delineating and including all of creation, both, if you will, which was Nigled, that which has already been told to us explicitly in the first chapter in Perek Aleph, as well as two spiritual creations which were not explicitly told to us, but I guess as an act of faith, the Ramban says, we assume were created and therefore alluded to in this pasuk. Okay, so now we're ready for pasuk beis. Again, let's review pasuk beis. It's a very tricky pasuk. V'echal Elohim v'yom hashvi'i melachto asher asa. Again, we're translated, it's the same root as v'yechulu. So we'll leave aside all of Rav Hirsch's fancy explanations. We'll assume it means that somehow God finished the work that he did on the seventh day. And he rested from all of his works. So take a look at Rashi, our first Rashi of the new season. Look at Rashi, the beginning, first one. Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he's quoting a Medrash. We're going to see that Medrash shortly inside. Basar v'dam, she'eni yodea, itav, ragav, a human being who can't exactly precisely know the exact time or minutes. Tzarech lahosif mechol al kodesh. That's why we can't wait till the last second to start Shabbos, says the Medrash. We have to start a little bit before, right? The minhag of 18 minutes for the candles and things like that. How come? What's 18 minutes? 18 minutes is really nothing. It's early. It's 18 minutes before. Before what? Before it's actually Shabbos. Why don't we wait? Because, who knows, maybe your clock is fast, maybe your clock is slow. We can't know exactly. Avol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Medrash, but Hashem, on the other hand, Sheodei Itav Ragav, he knows exactly what time it is, even more than the atomic clock that we have in the front of the shul. Nichnas Bo, famous phrase, Kachut Hasaira, like something, you know, as thin, as dark, as exact, like a teeny little hair or something, just that precise. That's exactly how much how Hashem can calibrate time. V'nira ki'ilu kala bobayom, and therefore it appeared as if Hashem had stopped, had completed his work on that day. Now, what is Rashi? What is the Medrash driving at? What is going on here? So before we can understand what he's saying, As it often is the case, Rashi is giving an explanation or trying to answer a question. But Rashi does not specify what the question is. Who knows what the question is before we can know the answer, which is not so clear. What's the question that Rashi is, how shall we say, coming to Bavorn?
Yeah.
What answers Rashi?
That would seem that he finished it on the seventh day.
So there's two ways of asking the question, but they're both correct.
Yeah.
Number one, says Harry, say it again, the Rashbam.
By looking at the shot, you're thinking on the seventh day. I mean, part of the seventh
Which
day.
Phrase sounds like that?
Right,
it sounds like Hashem. Or even Vaychal, right? Hashem stopped working by Yom HaShvi.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he was working into the seventh day, and at some point he stopped.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's correct. That's good. And the Sifrei Chachamim adds a twist, just to make it better, right? With a twist. Look at the Sifrei Chachamim, which can now be otherwise renamed the Rashbam with a twist. Says the Sifrei Chachamim. What's going on here? The Sifrei Chachamim, for those who are not familiar, the Sifrei Chachamim is one of the super commentaries, the commentary on Rashi. What he tries to do is, he points out, because again, Rashi does this regularly, Rashi will seamlessly transition from an implied question into an answer. So the Sifrei Chachamim tries to speak out what was bothering Rashi, so you should understand where he came up with whatever it is that he came up with. So says the Sifrei Chachamim, the Koshel Rashi, what bothered Rashi? The opening of the pasuk that Hashem stopped his work on the seventh day. It sounds like he was working into the seventh day, and then he stopped. But then afterwards, so that if we stop there, the Heliger Rashbam. But more than that, says the pasuk itself is an internal contradiction, because the continuation of the pasuk is the Sifrei Chachamim explains that Vishbos seems to be something more of an absolute stopping or resting, and therefore he suggests perhaps that implies that he didn't work at all. So then you have an internal contradiction. Yeah.
But that's the creation of the seventh day.
Oh, so we're going to get to an answer. You're already getting to an answer. Good. First, we want to know what the question is, right? So we have the question. It sounds like from the pasuk that Hashem was working on the seventh day. By the way, in case you're curious, this is where the first phrase of the title of the shir comes from. How many days did creation last? Was he creating into the seventh day or not? So says the Sifrei Chachamim, says Rashi, again, as we'll see, it comes from a Medrash. It's not so clear. We often take it as a matter of faith that God only worked 6 days. But it's not so clear. The Psukim themselves, one of the most famous Psukim in the whole Torah, Vaychal. Right, that sounds like Hashem was working on the seventh day. So now turn your attention back to Rashi. What is Rashi saying? It only appears. And as if a man, if there would have been a person who would have been watching that, if Adam is watching this, so it would appear to a naked man, you know, human eye, that it mamish went into Shabbos. But apparently, just you shouldn't feel bad if you were, especially in the winter, right? It can give you chizuk, right? Some of us are working mamish until the last second. We're working right until Shabbos. So was the Rabbanu Shalom. That's exactly what Rashi says. Hashem was working until the last second of day six, and literally at the split second that it went from day six to day seven. That's when Hashem stopped. And it appears, it looked as if Vayechal b'yom ha-shvi, that he was working until the seventh day. What's the truth? Vayishbos b'yom ha-shvi. Not that he was working into the seventh day, but it was absolute cessation. He wasn't working at all on the seventh day. He was only working until the last second of the sixth day.
Couldn't you say there are like two denim here? One is the first part of the pasuk where it says Vayechal, which means the cessation of work. And then the Vayishbos is adding a different dimension, adding a positive.
Which is what?
A dimension of Shavisa on Shabbos.
You could very well say that. I think that's what Gene was trying to say a moment ago, and we'll see that that's going to be an opinion. But so far we see, again, we start with Rashi, right? Rashi's our first Rebbe. We start with Rashi. What is, again, and as we have certainly, I hope, one of the things you've taken away is beyond the actual content. We have seen this time and time again. Even when Rashi is in on the surface, doing the nothing, quote unquote, doing nothing other than quoting a medrash, even then, Rashi is doing something, because the way he quotes it, which parts of the medrash does he quote, and we will see it's a fuller medrash than just Rashi's citation, but the way Rashi wants to phrase it, he does not, for whatever reason, Rashi does not go in with Gene or Ellie's answer, he's going with Rashbam's question and answer, namely, sounds like he was working. Could it be? No, Chas v'Shalom. God worked on the seventh day. Chal Shabbos, you know. Shabbos, Shabbos. I had to throw stones at Hashem. Hashem didn't work on Shabbos. Chas v'Shalom. He worked until the last minute, okay? He wasn't holding by 18 minutes and even by 20 minutes. But he got it in right before Shkia. That is the opinion of Rashi as understood by the Sefer Chachamim. And again, we'll see it's an approximation or a summary of opinion in the Medrash. Now, for starters, before we get to the Shabbos idea, just on a practical level, what would be so terrible? What would be so bad? Let me ask you a different question. So if that's what it meant, isn't there another way the Torah could have said it? Did it have to get us in such confusion? What could the Torah have said? So take a look. What version of the Torah does say Bayom HaShishi? The Septuagint. Septuagint, however you pronounce it. What's the Septuagint? Oh, what is that? The Greek translation of the Torah. This is the famous story which we have from Chazal. If you'll take a look, put it in the right place. Look at the next source on your sheet, the Gemara Megillah. Tells us about Talmai, the Egyptian king. I cut and pasted, not exactly in the middle of the Gemara here. You didn't get the first line of it, I'm sorry. But basically, the Gemara, the part that you don't have, is Talmai calling in the 70 sages, saying, write in Greek, write a Greek translation of Torah Moshe, of your biblical Torah. And again, obviously, why did he do that? He put them in the 70 different rooms because he suspected that they might change, right? In today's day, I don't know if they called it in Ptolemy's time, but we call it political correctness. He's worried that there'll be all sorts of politically incorrect parts of the Torah, and he's choshesh that if you ask one rabbi, the rabbi might flub a little bit and make the Torah more politically correct, right? This is the precursor to the politically correct bedtime stories, which was a bestseller a number of years ago, right? It took some famous stories and changed them up to make them more palatable to the modern, postmodern, I guess, technically accurate, the postmodern era that we're living in. So that's what Talmud worries. So he figures what he's going to do is he's going to outfox the foxes. He'll take 70 rabbis, put them in 70 rooms, and figures each one will try to schmaltz up the Torah whatever way to make it a little bit more politically correct, but that way he'll catch them because how could it be the 70 different rabbis are going to come up with the same thing. And this way he'll figure out what it really says in the Torah, and then he'll know whether he should be offended or not. So what does the Gemara tell us? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle. Nothan HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'leiv kolecha be'achad eitza. Hashem, so to speak, with no other way about it, it's a divine miracle. Iskimu kula da'zachas. That each one of them anticipated the same exact problems and the exact same solution. So all of them, to you, as was mentioned before, all of them, to be precise, mistranslated the Torah in a few specific ways. And they did it in the exact same way. And then the Gemara there goes on to list a few of the examples. In fact, the first two or three examples are examples from the beginning of Bereishis, which we already saw, and none other than our Pasuk. Take a look at the end of the second line. What did they write? Vayechal bayom hashishi, vayishbos bayom hashvi'i. God stopped working on the sixth day, and therefore by definition, he rested on the seventh day. Now that's what the Torah meant to say anyway. So Chazal, these 70 rabbis, just tweaked the word. Well, come on, 6 and 7 is just one little word. It's only a few letters, frankly, in one word, right? And the ayin and the yud and the hey and the shin. Same words, same letters anyway. So how much did they really change? It's a little teeny, weeny, weeny, weeny change. And really, it's not changing the meaning anyway, because that's what we believe anyway that it meant. But we didn't want Talmai to get the wrong impression. What does Rashi say? So take a look at Rashi here. Very interesting Rashi. And note the difference between Rashi and the Gemara. And Rashi on the Chumash. What does Rashi say in the Gemara? Vayechal b'yom ha-shishi, shelo yom arim kein asa malacha b'Shabbos. Don't think, chas v'shalom, that Hashem is the first machal Shabbos, that he was doing work on Shabbos. V'hoksiv vayechal b'yom ha-shvi'i. You might have gotten that mistaken impression because of the text that we actually have in the Chumash. Hu lo yekab lo lov midrash chachamim shedarshu bo. And Talmi's going to say, oh, you see, God worked on the Sabbath. How could you tell me that you can't come to work in my palace on the seventh day? You have a Sabbath. Even your God worked on Sabbath. So what are you going to go tell Talmi, the king? Oh, you don't know the Torah Shabbat. What's the drasha? And again, here's the key point. How does Rashi quote the drasha? Ma haya ha'olam chaser menucha. What was the world missing at the end of the 6 days of creation? The notion of menucha, of rest. Basa Shabbos, basa menucha. And that with Shabbos came this rest. Now, this version of Rashi is much more akin to what Gene and Ellie were saying before, that there was, in a sense, something created. It wasn't a work, but there was something that was actually created on Shabbos. Shabbos was created on Shabbos. Menucha, rest, was created on Shabbos. Until then, Hashem was working constantly. As one other opinion in the Medrash likens it to, again, this is an image which is familiar to us, so that's why I give you this as an example, even though it's not exactly in the Medrash. As we may be familiar, and I even mentioned in my Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, and I think I spoke for the men who may have been in shul the second night of Pesach before going to Yom Tov. What do we imagine when we talk about, we go to the matzah factory, and you have those older, the women who are working on the matzah factory, and they got the matzah, what are they doing? No. They take a second. They're not allowed to start. From the second they get that flower in, they don't stop moving for a second. So that's what Chazal say. That's in the whole 6 days. Hashem is working. Not for a second. Work. Comes the seventh day. So maybe you thought it's like the Energizer Bunny, right? Maybe you thought once you start working, you can never stop. No, so Hashem introduced a notion into the world that there's something called Menucha, you can rest. Now, it's just interesting, and I don't have an explanation for why. In the Gemara, Rashi says this, but that's not what Rashi said in our Pasuk. Now, the two very different ideas. I wouldn't say maybe very is too strong a word. They're different ideas. Where did Rashi get either or both of these? They both come from the Medrash. Before we see the Medrash inside, so now you have a question. So, how come Chazal was smarter than Hashem? If the whole thing is we're going to bring all sorts of misconceptions. We have to have this Torah Shebaal Peh where Chazal are going to tell us. Really, it means he stopped working on the sixth and rested on the seventh, right? The first opinion, especially. So why did the Torah just say it? Why do we need the Septuagint? Why do we need 70 rabbis to translate the Torah into Greek? And there they should write, V'chal V'yom HaShishi. Why didn't the Torah just say it? Right? Not everyone's going to learn the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? What do you have to create problems for? Right? When you create problems, maybe you won't have solutions. So the Maharal dips his foot into that water. That could be a deep pool when you start asking questions like that. But the Maharal is unafraid. And the Maharal says the following. If you take a look at the Gur Aryeh, that's the Maharal's commentary on Rashi, on our Pasuk. So the Maharal says, Im Tamar, you might have asked. Right, not me. It's been a from a yid, says the Maharal. I would never ask. But Im Tamar, maybe someone would ask. Loma lok siva yichal v'yamashishi. Let the Torah itself say that God stopped working on the sixth day. Ain't Zakasha. No question. Haiti Omer, says the Maharal, Shekola HaMalacha Be'emsa Yom HaShishi. He says, if it said V'yachal Yom HaShishi, you would have read that at some point in the middle, not the last second of the sixth day, but at some point during the sixth day, Hashem stopped. So you'll say, Nu, Ve'en La'akshos, Vim Hayi Perusho, Shekola HaMalacha Be'emsa Yom HaShishi, Ma Nafkamina. What's the big deal, as we would say? So let it be that. That way no one's going to get confused and Chas V'Shalom think that Hashem was working on Shabbos. So you're telling me that really Hashem worked in the last second and someone might read the Pasuk and think that Hashem stopped in the middle. Who cares? What's the big deal? So here says the Maharal, again, I don't know if this is Pshat and Chumash, even Pshat and Medrash, but it is an important Yisod nonetheless. Says the Maharal, it makes a big difference. V'nirush never gadol bolomar. Right, there's two reasons that you could stop. Hashem could have stopped because there's just nothing else to do. I'm working and working and working, right? And then you figure, it's like, I'm sure you've had this in your respective careers or lives when you have like a big project. You have something really big. You get to like this bunker mentality. You're working. I had this, just recently, before Yontif, right? I got these rushes, these shurim, these shadows, and I'm like in the bunker, I'm like all of a sudden, I'm done. Like, what do I do now? Like, you're so focused for so long on something. Like, sometimes it takes like a day to just recover. Like, what do I... So, you were going. Why did you stop? Because there was no more work to do. So, says the Maharal, you might have thought that was what was going on. Why do we have Shabbos? Hashem was working, and then looked around, talked, there's nothing else to do. And on day four, he looked around and says, ooh, still have to do this, still have to do this. And day five, ooh, I have to recreate the animals. Day six, right, still out of Chavra, I got to them too. And then on day seven, said... I guess I might as well stop. And that, says the Maharal, would be a tremendous problem. Why? You might have thought that. Chas v'shalom. Because if that would be the case, there would be no sense that a Shabbos is a beautiful, inherently meaningful thing. It's just, nothing left to do, so that we're stopping. Spring break. Chas v'shalom, says the Maharal. Shabbos is not that at all. Right? You might have thought, Hashem stopped because he had nothing else to do. But if he had more work, then he'd work on the seventh day. No. Therefore, you would think, Hashabbos, Shehu Yom Menucha, Mizan Rom Shabbos Ba'atzmo Ra'ei L'Shvisa. The idea again, he's just specifying, he's playing off of this medrash, this idea that Hashem was working long until the last second. Why was Hashem trying to slip it all in and get it in before the last second? Because before, so to speak, creation, as Maharal continues to say, it was very pure day, and then on the seventh day, there's this, right, as Hashem says, in the Medrash says in other places, Hashem says, you know, Marginisa Tava, I have this beautiful jewel, this beautiful present I want to give you. Shenikra Shabbos, it's called Shabbos. Hashem knew we got to finish by Shabbos, because Shabbos is important in and of itself. We need a Shabbos. And therefore, Hashem is working, working, working to get it all in before Shabbos. So says the Maharal, if it had said, V'chal v'yom ha-shishi, I might have thought he stopped working on the sixth day, because that's when he stopped working. So what do we do instead? We write V'chal v'yom ha-shishi. We get ourselves confused. The Chazal explained it means that he was working to the last second, so close. Hashem cut it closer than you or I, maybe, hopefully ever have. Hashem cut it so close to Shabbos that someone who's walking by, the naked eye, would have thought Taka Hashem didn't make the deadline. It was so close, like the Chodesh Sayer, like just like, how much did he make it by? Right? The thickness of a hair, literally nothing. But Hashem did that as a way of showing us that he wasn't stopping on Shabbos because he had no work to do. Trust me, if Hashem would work at a normal pace, he would have been working into Shabbos. But Hashem put it all in on the sixth day in order that you should realize that he was stopping on the seventh day because you're supposed to stop on the seventh day. There's something inherently meaningful about stopping on the seventh day. So it's a very interesting yisod. And even if you don't necessarily think that that's correct, so to speak, or a simple pshat in the Medrash, again, I think it begs the question, twofold. Number one, why? If the Chazal had such a good idea, how come the Torah didn't have the same good idea? Rabbi Yechal v'yom ha-shishi. And again, once you say the Ramban, if you assume the Maharal is correct, that the Chal v'yom ha-shishi implies that he stopped somewhere in the middle, which is probably true. Why would you have assumed that if you read the Chal v'yom ha-shishi, you thought Hashem worked up to the last minute of the sixth day? I don't know if anyone would have read it that way. So in the end, the question would be, okay, so what's the big deal? So I think those are questions that you probably have to ask if you make certain assumptions. And I think the answer that he gives is certainly a very interesting one. Banish Rashos. Ooh. This is later than Banish Rashos.
No, I'm saying Banish Rashos would be later than this. Banish Rashos is between...
Oh, how do you put those together? I don't know. Ellie, you have homework next week. And if you could find out before Wednesday, I'd appreciate it, because then I might change the topic of my year, depending if you find me something to do.
To the Twilight Zone.
No. Yeah, okay, we already have a title. Now we need content. We already have a title for next week's year. Now we need content. So let's see this Medrash. Until now we've been alluding to the Medrash. Let's see the Medrash inside. What does the Medrash actually say? Look at the bottom of the first page of your sheet. Rav Shalal Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Amarle, he asked him, Rav Shmuel is the son of another great rabbi, Rabbi Yossi. Shamata me'alicha, did you hear from your father? Did you hear from Rabbi Yossi? Mahu v'chal kim yomashbi. What's pshat? Ismaha. And as he's wondering, it's astounding. It's a question, because it sounds like Hashem is working to the seventh day. What was going on? Kazehu, it was going like this. It's as if the mashal, the parable is, Maka b'kurnus al-gabi hasadan, right? It's like a guy who's working in the blacksmith, he's banging his hammer on the anvil, right? You know, like he's making some metal work. Higbiya mi ba'od yom, and it's as if Hashem, if you will, or the master, this blacksmith, he lifted up the hammer while it was still day. Horida mishitifshach, but literally, it was at the last second, so in the little second that it takes to lift up the hammer, by the time the hammer came down, it had switched from day into night, which is a parable. It's an imaginative, illustrative way of saying the opinion that we first saw by Rashi, as he now concludes. Amar Rav Shmuel Yochai, Boser v'dam she'enu day lo itav lo regav lo she'osav, a human being who can't know with exact certainty the exact time, who most mechol kodesh, so we start Shabbos a little early. Well, kodesh baruch hu yodei, Hashem knows the exact time. Nichlas v'kachut hasara. Right, so that's the answer which we already saw in Rashi, and that's the one that's come to source here is the Medrash with the following allegory. I think that's pronounced Gvina. That's a person. We don't know who he is really, I don't think, but so I don't know how common you hear his name, but he's a Chacham. He was a Chacham, and he's hanging out with the Rabbonon. So they each give a Moshal, again, to illustrate a slightly different point. Omar, Moshal Amelech, She'osel Ochupa, B'tzayara, Bukira. What happened? You have a king who made a beautiful chuppah. And he didn't just make the beautiful chuppah, he decorated it, and he put beautiful flowers on it. Everything was there. Mamish, beautiful, spitz, it was a great chuppah. Amahaisa chasera, one little thing missing. Tala! Shitana lutoka. You can't have it, it doesn't matter. You can do a wedding, you can do without many things at the wedding. You can't do without the bride. You need the bride. It's a beautiful chuppah, it's going to be more garnished if it's got a kala. So too says the Chacham. Bahaya Olam Chasar. Hashem spends all these days beautifully making the world. What was the world missing? Was missing Shabbos. There's a second opinion. I didn't have enough places on the sheet. The Rabbanan then say, again, it seems to be the exact same point. I don't know why we need a second imagery. I was going to actually throw out to you, if anyone could think what might be a nuanced difference. The Rabbanan give a different image, which is, let's say, a king makes for himself a beautiful ring. Beautiful ring. What's the only thing that he's missing on it? The signet. Right? It might be your ring, it might be my ring, unless he puts his little signet, you know, as they, it was, that was the custom of kings of yore. They signed things with a signet ring. So it says, he had a beautiful ring, what was he missing? A machaser, just the signet. So too the world was beautiful, it was just missing one thing, Shabbos. This second opinion in the Medrash, not the one that says it's like the blacksmith with the anvil and the hammer, this would seem, even though it's not spelled out in this Medrash, this would seem to be the source for the idea that Eli and Jean was saying and the idea that Rashi and the Gemara Megillah was saying. Namely, here we have, again, it's not a creation in the sense of like the chuppah is making the creation, but the point is something is contributed on Shabbos which gives meaning to the previous 6 days. That's how I would understand the imagery of the Medrash when it talks about the chuppah and the kalah. The chuppah is meaningless unless something is going to happen in the room. So, one second. So, the second opinion seems to be the second opinion, similarly, which we saw from Rashi and Megillah, which that the world is perfect, we're just missing one thing, menucha, rest. And therefore, so to hear, the chuppah is perfect, it's missing one thing, it's missing the kalah. So it's not that Hashem was creating in a very concrete or active way, but it does seem like there was something that is, I wouldn't necessarily call created, but I might call it contributed to creation, or not stam a detail, but it sounds like if you take the mashal of the Medrash literally, it's what gives meaning to the whole creation, or else shav, right? It's not just that there's one little thing missing. It's not like you look at a chuppah. You can look at a chuppah and say everything's beautiful, but it's missing the flowers. Some flowers are beautiful. That's not the same thing saying a chuppah is beautiful, but it's missing the kalah. When you say a chuppah is missing, beautiful, but it's missing the kalah, what you're saying is it's meaningless. In retrospect, it'll be beautiful, but it'll only be beautiful if it has meaning, and what gives it meaning is the kalah. Yeah.
I wonder if this is. I wonder if this is the source for the Lachododi concept.
Yes. So I don't know if it's the source, but it may very well have been. And the Mefarshei HaMedrash do in this context quote Bo'ikala, what we say in Shabbos. Exactly. The idea of Shabbos being a queen, that imagery, so that very well maybe comes from this Medrash. Yes.
We see Torah and the Kriya, Bri'as Olam, in retrospect. In other words, Ribbono Shel Olam always had 7 days of creation.
The Maharal makes that in mind. The Maharal
was and the seventh day was in creation was the day of rest. So it was all created as part of creation. In other words, the seventh day is also part of creation, and that day is a day of rest. I don't see.
So you're being consistent. You like the second opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. That's. You got good sources on your side. But it's interesting that Rashi in the Torah and the first opinion in the Medrash are, I guess, nervous about that. They want to even be firmer than that. They want to make sure that no one should have any confusion, and it really means that Hashem stopped. It's just that he stopped at this one time. Yeah. Maybe the answer is, maybe everyone agrees, is that they don't think that that's called a creation. I don't know. Okay? I don't know. Those are the two opinions, yes.
So, what I'm trying to understand what Gene said is it that the two points of view that the Rebbe Shlom stopped work, and at the instant that he stopped work, by default, Shabbos.
No. At the instant that Hashem stopped, happened to be the instant that Friday was ending and Shabbos was beginning. Literally, on the dot, on the nose.
At the instant he stopped, then...
That happens to be when it was Shabbos.
It wasn't, but... right, but...
Not because.
Shabbos exists by the fact that he stopped work. As opposed to what Gene is saying, that he actually
Shabbos,
created Shabbos.
You're correct, but I would just change it one little bit. That is, Shabbos is a term that we use. It's a confusing term. Just call it the seventh day. The first opinion is that Hashem finished work at the last second of the sixth day. Mamash of the seventh day was about to start. That's the first opinion. The second opinion is whether or not that's true is almost besides the point, but that the Torah is trying to tell us that Hashem actually, what you want to call it, created or contributed, but there was something missing even after the end of 6 days, and that was called Menucha, or what we would call Shabbos, and therefore that was added to creation during the seventh day.
It's a positive thing as opposed to...
Just the absence of a negative.
Because
without
that, my Yishvot B'yom HaShvi'i would be superfluous.
Well, you have to say... Look, obviously there's something you have to say. obviously there's something you have to say, because that's... Okay, good. Listen, I started late, so give me a few minutes. We'll end late. Okay, we'll try to end at 9:05. We have a lot more to do, even if we want to end at 9:05. So let me just see what I can get through. So just to mention, you have a few more sources here. The Sephorno, for those who are interested, the Sephorno seems to go like, which opinion in the Medrash? The first line of the Sephorno, second page. Betchilas Yom HaShviti, right? Shu HaRega HaBilti Mitzvah, right? The last second, says the Sephorno, right? The Sephorno goes, Rav Avadya Sephorno, the great Italian Parshan, he goes like that opinion in the Medrash. Rav Yitzchak B'chor Shor, I don't know if this might be his first contribution to this series, the B'chor Shor. So he also, in his commentary on the Torah, he has an interesting discussion. What does the B'chor Shor say? B'chor Shor, the truth is, this is also a Chizkuni. For those who have a Chizkuni, this is also if you have some of the Gros Gadol have a Chizkuni, what does the B'chor Shor say? B'yom Hashvi, no de venira, shekil yom Hashvi. This is a very interesting idea. This, I think, might be a little bit new. What's Pshat? Why do we have the Shishi, the Shvi? What's going on? Because only once there was no work on the seventh day, this is what Gene was referring to also, I think, a little bit before, in retrospect, in hindsight, we know that Hashem had stopped working on the sixth day. The B'yom Hashishi lo no de shekila. How did Adam know that there wasn't going to be more work on Shabbos? How would anyone have known? There was no way to know. Hashem may have known. There was no way for the rest of the universe to know that there wasn't going to be anything more created. How do we know something else is going to happen tomorrow or not? That's the first opinion. That's really a chaskuni that the B'chor Shor quotes. That's why you have the double phrase. It sounds like Hashem was working into the seventh day. No, it was that in the seventh day we realized that the last work that had been done was on the sixth day. Then the B'chor Shor adds, "V'lini re v'chal lokim yom hashvi'i kolamar b'riyas yom hashvi'i." It's the seventh day. What was the creation of the seventh day? Kila ma'isav concluded the creation. And this is a very strong and emphatic and beautiful exposition of that second opinion in the Medrash, what I'm calling the Gene Eli approach, namely, Shahari Kolzman Shlo Nas Yom HaShvi'i Lo Kila Seder Bereshis. Right? Until Hashem completed the seventh day, we didn't have the Seder Bereshis completed. And what was added then? As the Medrash and others say, the Menucha, the Oneg, the Shabbos, the whole idea of resting, and again, not just resting like you're lazy, resting even in a physical sense, but also in a spiritual sense, that is what was contributed. So there was a chisaron, was something lacking in creation until what was positively contributed on the seventh day. Okay, now we have 5 minutes left. I want to just quickly go through a second point, a second issue. So Adkan, that's our first issue. Again, a very famous discussion going back to the Chachamim and the Medrash, going back to the famous Septuagint of how do you understand Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis, Vayechal B'yom HaShvi'i, did Hashem work into the seventh day or did He not? Was something created on the seventh day or was it not? Two opinions in the Medrash, and you see in the Mefarshei HaChumash, two opinions as well. Now we have another question. Not Vayechal, Vayishbos. What does Vayishbos seem to imply? Right? If Vayishbos means Vayishavas, meaning to rest. So, if you were working for 6 days without stop, and then you came to the seventh day, Vayishbos Yom HaShvi'i, and you stopped. So if I were to tell you, right, this is like a dramatics class, and I would tell you, act out. Demonstrate that pasuk. How would you do it? So I think the way the Mefarshim seem to be bothered is that they were in a class, they would have gone, Vayishbos Vayom HaShvi. Shava, I'm sorry. You're like, Hashem collapses into the easy chair just in time for Shabbos. Right? If I'll paraphrase what our Skalosidin said in Shalashudas last week, he's huffing and he's puffing and he's fitzing and he's pissing and he just rushes in and he just makes it. What a long week. But if that's the correct shot implication of a Yishbos, that is very problematic. Could it be? Hashem is exhausted. Hashem needs a rest. Why does Hashem need a rest? What does Vayishbos connote? And it can't mean that. So we'll see three, let's see a few different answers or opinions that are mentioned here. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. One last thing. I apologize with all that. With everything that was said and done, I apologize. I've been waiting all day to use that, you know, dramatics line to you. I'm sorry. My mother is a thespian, as she would call herself. So, A little bit I have to try to do. But just before I jumped ahead, I missed the Eben Ezra. Can never forget Eben Ezra. Eben Ezra says that the first 50 minutes of this year were all a waste of time. But it's okay, because he's basically telling Chazal that they missed the point too. So if he can say that to Chazal, he can say it to us too. Says to Eben Ezra, you misread the whole pasuk. Vayichal b'yom hashvi'i, the bays shetamo kodem. It means, the bays means before. That's how you read the pasuk. And he quotes two other proof texts, Lo Sak Sam Shorbadisho, which means you shouldn't muzzle him before, or Ach B'yom HaRishontai, which is the better one, Ach B'yom HaRishontai Shvishul Sa'or. Right? It doesn't mean that on the first day of Pesach, destroy Chometz. It means before the first day of Pesach, destroy Chometz. B'os, as a prefix, says the Eben Ezra, means before. So B'yom HaShvi'i means before the seventh day, i.e., at the end of the sixth. So you don't need to get all nervous, and you don't get all questioned, and you don't have to have a kala without a chuppah, and a chuppah without a kala, and you don't need a ring without a signet. You don't need any of that, says the Eben Ezra. Just read Pasuk Chumash with a good teishvertin, as we would say. Just read the, translate the words with precision, and you would be okay. Okay, obviously, the Alchum of the Medrash and other Mefarshim didn't read the Beis the same way the Eben Ezra did, but again, it's worth putting in your back pocket. Okay, now we're ready for the question of what's pshat with Vayishbos. Does that really imply that Hashem had to work hard and everyone needed to rest and needed to stop? How do you translate Vayishbos? We always say day of rest. Right, how do you translate Vayishbos and Vayishvi? What the average person translates? God rested on the seventh day. What, God needs to rest?
Break.
God needs a break?
No, I'm saying a break.
Okay, good. So let's see answers to that question.
Like the Kinnis on
Shabbos, right? Shabbos, right? Right. So look at Rabbeinu Sajagon. So Rabbeinu Sajagon says what Eli says. Hishbis milivro. Another way of translating it is not as rest, but as cessation. Who will tell me, someone on the woman's side, who will tell me, what does the art scroll translate? How does it translate? Abstain. Abstain. So good. So that's like the Rabbeinu Sajagon. I quote the Rabbeinu Sajagon in the footnotes. Take a look in the footnotes. Does? That it says it means the same? Right, abstain. The idea again, it doesn't mean Hashem rested. Hashem doesn't need a rest. It means Hashem stopped. Hashem abstained. Okay, that's what the Rabbeinu Sajagon says. Look at the Radak. The Radak says a different answer. The Radak understands that it means to rest. Doesn't that create a problem? That's his implied question. What's his answer? Uba Amra Vayishbos Dibra Torah Belashen B'nei Adam. We would interpret it, that's how we mean the word. And that's how we envision someone working for 6 days and stopping. You must be exhausted, so you rest. Ki ain lafana, but of course it's not true. Ki ain lafana of yigia. But working backwards, if you want to ask, and Radak is a pashtan, how does the Radak understand the word vayishbos? He understands that it means rest from hard work. Is that really true theologically? No, but Dibra Torah B'Loshmei Adam, that's the way that it makes what happened more accessible to us on our level. And in fact, if you take a look at the continuation of our Medrash, same Medrash we quoted before, that's exactly where the Radak is getting it from. It wasn't really with hard work, it wasn't really with effort. The S overcome Alakto, Atma, is it really true? Ella, so the Medrash has two answers. The second answer the Medrash gives on the bottom is that he created Shana, Nacha, Shalva, Veshkei, right? He added all this. But the first opinion that the Medrash gives is a very powerful theological one. Ella, Liparam, and Harashayim, or as the Medrash continues, right? Lahakmol, Esatadikim, which is very interesting. True, it was as easy for Hashem to create the world as it is for you if you snap our finger. But if I mess up your ability to snap, are you really going to get upset at me? Because what have you lost? But if you spent hours and hours and hours building a model train or who knows what, and then I came in and I knocked it over, so why are you going to be upset? Why do I get in more trouble? Why are your parents going to get that boy who messed up his sister's toys in trouble? Because of all the work she had put in. It says the Medrash, that's one. Why does this imply that Hashem put in so much effort into Bereishis? So that those who ruin Bereishis, they have the Rishayim who do Averas, will get punished more, and on the contrary, says the Medrash, continuing, and to give greater reward for the Tzaddikim. If you'll tell me, what do the Tzaddikim do? All they're doing is helping something that Hashem barely took any effort to create. So what do the Tzaddikim? So no, it's almost vegi, it is as if it was with great work, that gives greater consequence to what human beings do in their world. Just to conclude, you can read it yourself, we ran out of time, and I want to read it inside for the sake of time, but you should just know that on these psukim is very, very famous Torah. very famous Tamei HaMitzvos, perhaps the most famous Tamei HaMitzvos, certainly in the modern era, but even probably before that, about Shabbos and Malacha, is Rav Hirsch's Torah. Who made Rav Hirsch's Torah so famous? Rav Hirsch had one of, if not his preeminent student, was named Diane Grunfeld, who went from Germany to London. In fact, my grandmother, she should live and be well, as a young daughter, had Rebbetzin Grunfeld as a teacher and Reish Yaakov in London close to the turn of the century. So Diane Grunfeld was a preeminent student of Rav Hirsch, and he prepared two books. He prepared Chorev, and he also prepared a book called The Sabbath, which is specifically on Shabbos, which is taking Rav Hirsch's Torah and popularizing it. And he basically makes the idea of Rav Hirsch's understanding of Shabbos, which again, if you'll see, Rav Hirsch is already hinting at it in his commentary on our Pasuk, and I gave you the crux of Diane Grunfeld's approach, and the bottom line is he's saying really it's from Rav Hirsch, but the notion of Malacha on Shabbos is creative work, and that Shvisa mi Malacha by Yishabos, that we don't do work on Shabbos, it's not, as one might have thought from the previous Medrash and the discussion of Yishabos, hard work Hashem was doing, Hashem stopped, therefore we're not allowed to do hard work on Shabbos. So what happens? I've seen this in Etiyasuai, I've seen this in Isha Torah, and I've even seen this with Frumkis 1,000 times. So what do people say? If they know a little bit, well, it's like in the room, if we're all in this room, I can pick up the table, I can schlep back and forth 100 times. Schwitzen and Pitzen, I didn't do anything wrong. I take a little teeny piece of paper and I could rip it, and then I could put it into something else, and that's a molacha. Does that make any sense? Says that. One second, okay, I'm not going to have time to see what you'll tell me afterwards. And that is, again, that's the idea that it's not about effort or hard work. It's about these creative acts, which, again, we derive them from the Medrash, technically. But this, again, I'm giving you only the 2-second version of it. Take a look at this paragraph if you want the 15-second version. And I really encourage you to take a look at the book itself. It's very easy reading if you want the fuller and complete version. Okay, Shabbat for everyone. We'll see you next week. Hopefully on time.